Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Talking Some Sense. Welcome to episode one of season three. Already our third season of this podcast. Wow, the time flies. Today I'm joined by my co-host, Alex Longois. We can't wait to get started.
What's up? Nice to be back.
Oh, can't wait. Can't wait to get started.
We haven't done excited, excited to talk about some sense.
Well, yeah, talking some sense, all right?
Yeah, that's it.
Today we got some new info for you guys. Every season we try to change it up a little bit. This season we've got some new segments and all that, and let's get started. So we've got our sense news and weekly report, our prospect analysis, a new cap-friendly segment, and we're going to be doing a weekly player review. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Jacob LeRevere. Alex at AlexLongweb15, and you can find our podcast account at Some Sense. Once again, these will be in the description of this episode if you cannot spell phonetically. But yeah, let's get underway.
Let's go.
What a busy, busy season for the Senators so far. A few transactions already up to fidgeting with the taxi squad and all that. But we also have a trade to talk about, right?
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere, to be honest with you.
Yeah, honestly, it came out of nowhere. The Ottawa Senators traded Cedric Paquette and Alex Galchenyuk to the Carolina Hurricanes. And in return, the God, the Lord, the speedy winger Ryan Dzingel's coming back to town, baby.
Let's go.
Yeah,
I feel like you're more excited about this trade than I am. I mean, I still like the trade, but I feel like if you follow Jacob on Twitter, you've probably seen. I don't think he slept at all that night. I think he was just jumping off the walls and super fired up.
I was super fired up. With the way I was tweeting, you could swear we just traded for Connor McDavid or something. My God.
Seriously though, but yeah, I personally think it's a good move by Pierre Dorion. As much as I still question if Alex Galchenyuk could have helped a lot in this lineup and he got more of a chance. I mean, clearly he was not getting his chances, so moving him out isn't that big of a deal. And now he actually got moved from Carolina to Toronto. So clearly Carolina didn't want him either. So Cedric Paquette, he was brought in to bring like a veteran presence, some physicality and stuff like that, and he did not do that in Ottawa. I think he is just as disappointed with himself as all the Sens fans are in Pierre Dorion. I think he thought he was going to come in and make a difference, but he just couldn't seem to get his legs or anything like that. And I don't know if you've seen the clip, but his first game in Tampa Bay, he was already better. Sorry, first game in Carolina, he was already better and throwing more hits and causing some stirs and some ruckus, which is what he was supposed to do in Ottawa. But clearly something didn't go right with Ottawa. So I do wish Paquette the best luck in Carolina. I do hope he finds success there because I'm a big fan of his style of play, and I was super jacked up about when we got him. But clearly things, him and DJ Smith or whatever, just didn't fit. So now we get Ryan Dzingel, who adds some speed, much-needed speed in that lineup. Again, more veteran presence since he has been on this team before and knows how it works and kind of, you know, been to that, was part of that playoff run team. He instantly becomes a leader on the squad and he can produce some offense. I don't think we'll see the Ryan Dzingel of old potting like 25, 30 goals a season, but he will pot in a couple of goals, that's for sure. And his speed's going to be greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated on that Senators team.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Alex said, Ryan Dzingel is a great speedy forward who can definitely help us in the short term and possibly long term. You never know. Here's my take on the trade. Alex Galchenyuk, when we signed him, I was confused at first. I was like, where does he play in our lineup? He's a speedy top six winger, ideally. But the thing is, when we signed him, we already seemed to have our team already. We had Derek Stepan. We had a lot of guys. We didn't have Derek Stepan at that point. We had someone. I don't think we signed at that point. But yeah, it seemed to me that our team was pretty set. Then we decided to get Alex Galchenyuk. Alex Galchenyuk was basically just an extra forward who we signed to, in my opinion, I think he was sort of a guy to help ease Stutzla into the NHL. I don't think the plan was to get Stutzla to play every game right away. I think the plan was have him and Alex Galchenyuk alternate a little bit, but Timmy was clearly ready to jump in right away, and he has blown everybody away so far. He's not Connor McDavid by any means, but Timmy Stützle is here to stay. And that's what pushed Alex Gatchenyuk out of the lineup, in my opinion. Where else would he have played in the lineup? Would you put him on the third line, fourth line? I'm not quite sure. So that he didn't have his role anymore, so you had to move on from him. And Cedric Paquette, like Alex said, he's a great player if in the right role. In Carolina, he's in the right role. In Tampa Bay, he was in the right role. A fourth line forward who can contribute hits and possibly penalty kill here and there, but not a full-time PKer like he was in Ottawa. He's not the guy to be relied on. He's a complimentary guy you add in here and there. Cedric Paquette is a grinder. He can throw the body. He can pass a little bit. He can play the body. He plays rough. But he's not a guy you want playing more than 10 minutes a night. And I'm pretty sure he was playing more than that in Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing with the Cedric Paquette is that the way we got him, we didn't trade a lot for him. We got him and Colburn for, who was it, Anders Nielsen and Marian Gaborik, two players that probably will never play again, unfortunately, due to injuries. So it's not like we traded or gave up anything. And we actually got a second round pick in return for him too. So it's not necessarily an awful trade by Dorian, the Paquette trade, because we didn't give up much for him. But the trade also didn't work out the way that everybody thought it would, including Paquette, like I mentioned earlier. So it's nice to see him move on and kind of Dorian kind of realizing that, you know, we needed to do something because clearly the way this team started, something had to be done. And another thing with this trade, before we move on real quick, I don't know if it was more of a trade. Like, I don't know if it was too much of a desperation trade. I think it was more of a trade on Dorian's thing, saying, listen, guys, you need to wake up. Like, no one's – like, everybody's expendable on this team. It was also kind of a quick wake-up call. And the way – he traded two players for one, which is always – I mean, you can never argue with that, which is also frees up a roster spot for – everybody thought it was going to be Logan Brown. Logan Brown, I mean, we'll get to him later, but clearly he has not earned his spot on the Senators quite yet. But yeah, so I think the trade is fine. I do hate that we don't see the single till March 1st. Kind of, I mean, it's not the end of the world, I guess, but I don't know. I wish, I get it, quarantine and stuff like that. Everybody needs to be safe and, you know, stay healthy and whatnot, but it's just a shame we don't get to see him till March 1st.
Yeah, exactly. And before we do move on from this Ryan DeZingle trade, I have a question. Where do you think Ryan DeZingle plays in this lineup? I'll add my thoughts afterwards, but I want to hear your thoughts first.
It's tough. I honestly would probably put Ryan DeZingle on a line with Tim Stützle. I don't know. I think my ideal line would probably be, you have Tkachuk, Norris, and probably Dadonov on the first line. Because I do think Norris and Tkachuk already have that built-in chemistry because they're already best friends. And Dadonov, well, he's starting to get going. The second line, I would probably put DeZingle. Honestly, I would probably try and put maybe Nick Paul at center and Stützle on the wing as well, just to see how that would work. I feel like Stützle has a creativity to play on the wing. I don't know if he's ready for a full-time like center spot yet. He will be, but not as of right now. And with the Zingle speed, Stützle's creativity, and Nick Paul's big body, Nick Paul makes room for Stützle to make his creativity with his big body. The Zingle gets to the net with his speed. Or Nick Paul stands in front of the net with Stützle's creativity and Zingle speed. So either or, I'm interested to see how that lineup would work. I don't know if that's the end-all, be-all lineup. Like, there's with the Zingle speed and Stützle's creativity, you can easily put them anywhere. But I do want to see how a speedy winger, a big power forward and a skilled winger would do on one line. But I also wouldn't be afraid to move DeZingle up to the first line either and kind of, you know, rotate him and Tkachuk a little bit.
That's fair. I forgot to unmute my mic there. So now that my mic is unmuted, I'm going to add in that. That's very interesting. I didn't even think of Nick Paul at center, but that's very interesting. I'm going to go a little different though. First line for me would be Brady Tkachuk, Josh Norris, and Dadonov. Yes, that I would keep. I think that's an interesting lineup. Brady Tkachuk is the power forward of that line. He can carry the offense. Josh Norris is a guy who shoots a lot, but it's obvious that I think it's a little obvious that DJ Smith is kind of trying to roll him into more of a playmaker passer type of guy first, pass first, then a shoot first. Kind of like a guy who would get, what, 40 or 50 assists to 20 to 25 goals. Not saying he's ever going to get that, but I think that's the player that DJ Smith is trying to mold.
It makes sense with the, like, if they stay on like Tkachuk and Dadonov line, because Dadonov is going to be that goal scorer, and Tkachuk is going to be the guy that gets in front of the net. So if you have an elite passer that can get the puck to either Dadonov so he can shoot with Tkachuk in front of the net, like, that line's going to generate some offense.
So I
do think that's probably a more of a role for Norris, is to be that top line play. Calling him a top line center kind of bothers me, because I don't think he's ready for top line center yet. But obviously on this team, I think, you know, why not? But in the future, I think he's probably more of a second liner, maybe a very, very good third liner that could, you know, like, will be on the power play.
Who, so. Paul?
No, Josh Norris.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I on this team, I think he's a first line center, just because I think the skill is there. But I think, you know, if we're going to compete, I don't think he should be there.
Josh Norris is ideally second line center. I do agree with that.
I do think Stützle I do think Stützle should be the number one center in the future. 100%. But we'll see how that works. Yeah.
As of right now, my lines would be Tkachuk, Norris, Dadonov, and second line would be, I would actually do Dzingel, Stützle, and Batherson. And I'll explain why. So Batherson and Stützle have formed a great chemistry so far. I don't want to see them split up in the near future, possibly in the long-term future either. I think they're that dynamic duo the Senators need. Sure, Brady Tkachuk's the guy, but have him play more of a Gabriel Landeskog type role, be the leader of the team, and have Timmy Stützle and Batherson carry the offense more. You know what I mean there?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think that's probably the way it's going to end up, because I do think those two together are going to be able to carry the offense. But it's just a little biased in me. I like the big players, like the big physical players. So I like to see Nick Paul and see what he can do there.
That's fair.
Batherson and Stützle definitely should stay together for as long as they can, because they're forming some great plays.
But let me go behind who plays center. All three of these guys have played center at some point in their pro careers. Sure, we drafted Drake Batherson to be center, but he has played better at the wing, so I think he stays there at right wing. Ryan Dzingel, we all know he is ideally a winger. We know that, right? But I think that if you alternate Timmy and Dzingel from left wing to center every couple of games, you can get Timmy slowly implemented as center. And you can also get that speedy winger they need to score goals in Ryan Dzingel, but he can also take faceoffs because he's played that center before. Obviously, Dzingel is ideally a center. Ideally a winger, but I don't think it'd be a bad idea to have him centering a line of Stützle and Batherson.
Interesting take. I mean, I see Dzingel more as a winger, but yeah, I mean, he can play center, and I'm sure, like, who knows, maybe they might put him there. I have no idea what DJ Smith's plans are for him. But, either way, he's going to bring some speed and some offense, what that top line needs. Can't be Stützle, Batherson, and Tkachuk carrying that offensive load. They kind of got to split it up between a couple lines. So,
yeah, that's exactly, yeah. But, yeah, let's go on from that. Let's talk about some taxi squad transactions. So this past week, we've seen a little bit of a coaching carousel, given that Matt Murray has been sort of injured to pass a little bit. Of course, he's close to return. He's supposed to start tonight, I'm pretty sure. We're recording this at 6:30 on Wednesday, the 17th. So by the time this uploads, the game will already have been done. But as of before recording this, Matt Murray has not played yet. I'm pretty sure he's playing tonight, right?
I don't know. DJ Smith says he'll play one of the next two games. So whether that's tonight or tomorrow, I don't know. But either way, he's definitely playing soon. So
yeah. But basically, the point is the third goalie being the backup goalie in his place, because normally our tandem is Murray and Hogberg, right? But Hogberg has had to play some starting minutes because Murray's injured. So that third guy normally would be Joey Decord, but given that the AHL season started and you want him to play as many games as possible, we flipped Gustafsson and Decord. You have Gustafsson in the NHL and Decord in the AHL. I have Decord play some games, but now that Murray is coming back, I think they flip-flopped again. Joey Decord is in the NHL and Philip Gustafsson is in the AHL. And this means I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with Hogberg. Hogberg hasn't been too great to start the year. Sure, he's been a little better the past couple games, but is it going to keep going?
See, I think that's why you see the core up now. They brought him up because Hogberg was struggling. I don't think they had any intent. I think they had the full intention to make him the starting goalie in Belleville. But with Hogberg struggling the way he was, they need, and then he's be the starter. They're like, man, he's going to, there's a legitimate plant chance he might play. So why not get him some NHL reps? Mm-hmm. But I think you'll see him get swapped again in a little bit here and get sent back down to the AHL and have Gustafsson as the taxi squad goalie. I'm not sure what they do, but maybe even go out and sign another third goalie to just play taxi squad. I'm not sure, because they obviously want Kevin Mandelis playing. They kind of only want Gustafsson playing. They want Joey Decord playing, and you can obviously can only have a certain amount. But with no ECHL, where Mandelis likely would have started with Brampton, they kind of it's kind of causing a little bit of a goaltending, I guess, what plug, I guess you could say. But as for Hogberg, I think he will remain the backup for a little bit. He started off really rough, no question about that. So did Murray, though, to be fair. Both of them had they were both struggling, and they both seemed to have found their game. Hogberg wasn't the greatest in that game against Toronto, but he did make some big saves when they needed it, and I've been saying this all along. So, like, Ottawa's goalies don't have to be perfect. They just need to make the saves when they need the saves. Hogberg was awful for the longest time. He was sliding out of his net, was not tracking the puck well, but he seemed to have found his confidence again. So I do think they keep him there for a little bit longer. I don't know what his future is past this season. I think Decord is knocking on the door. I don't know if I should say this on the podcast, so if I decide it's not, then edit it out, please. But I do have a source that says the Senators are super high on Joey Decord, and they do see him as a future starter. He was the goaltending coach. I can't even say that. No, I can't say that. So, we'll just leave it with that. Joey Decord is looked at highly regarded by the Senators organization, by a very reliable source who has been within the organization. So, I don't know if Hogberg stays past this season. I think they expose him to Seattle and hopefully crossing their fingers that Seattle take him.
That's interesting.
But I do think they might try and move him at the deadline and give Decord the backup role for the rest of the season to at least get some reps. But with Murray under contract for 3 or 4 years, I don't know. Maybe they stick with Hogberg and just give Decord playing time. I'm not sure.
That's bombshells right there. Alex dropping some bombshells. Decord's the goalie of the future. Let's go.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah. I'm really, really high on Gustafsson, but I could see why Decord is the guy they're focused on right now. He's had the best success out of all of our goalie prospects so far, and Decord has had the best success. So, yeah, I don't see why not.
It's tough because the Sens also have Matt Sogard, who I think is probably the highest on my goaltending list. I think he's probably the highest prospect on my goaltending list for the Senators. So it'll be interesting to see what they do down the line.
Yeah, I like that. Let's move on from that, though. Basically, next is a little bit of an injury update. So Erik Brännström has been injured for past little bit, like I'd say a week or so. But he is coming back tonight, according to DJ Smith. So we're going to see him against Toronto tonight and see how he plays well. Please make sure I don't regret getting him in fantasy hockey. That's all I hope for. Don't make me regret him.
I think we're starting to see what Erik Brännström is made of, so I don't think you'll regret him. I don't think you'll regret. I do know there's a couple fans who, I mean, obviously he's part of the Mark Stone trade, and that every time I bring that up, probably the only trade that really stinks for me from the past. I know you probably think differently, but that Stone trade is the only one that I wish we could have back. But Brännström is definitely showing why he was the top rated defense prospect, and he's finally coming to his own. The longest time he was so small and just looked so scared to get hit. Now, obviously, he was not because his injury was because he got hit. So he is a capable puck moving defenseman that I think Ottawa desperately needs with Shabbat, Zub, and Brännström. The puck, like, the Senators can get the puck out of their net. Before, they weren't before when they had, you know, Colburn and all those guys in there, they had no puck movers besides Shabbat. So now that, so Brent Branstrom in there is huge.
Yeah. I think that, yeah. Brent, when I think of Eric Branstrom, all I can think of is.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. If he, he, I don't have to say he's the next Eric Carlson, but he has Eric Carlson-esque features. It's really a treat to watch him, and I'm sure Sens fans will get lucky to, you know, they'll realize how lucky they are actually, that we actually were able to get him from Vegas, because I'm sure they did not want to part with him, but here we are. So I have high hopes for Eric Branstrom, and I think him and Shabbat are going to form. I actually think he might be a better defenseman than Thomas Shabbat in the future.
That's dropping some, Alex dropping some more bombshells today. Drop the mic.
First episode back, I'm feeling good, you know?
Wow. I don't know if I'm that high on Branstrom. Like, when I think of Eric Branstrom, I think he is the next coming of Eric Carlson. Maybe not necessarily as good, but he has that similar style. Eric Branstrom plays defense by playing offense. He does not let you get the puck. He gets the puck and shoots it and passes it. He doesn't let you get the puck. He does the work. That's how he plays defense. And I like that style. It's interesting. As long as you have the right partner for him, man, it's great. And this is, I'm going to say this right here. I think the Ottawa Senators decor next year is going to be Thomas Chabot with Artem Zub, and then Jake Sanderson with Eric Branstrom. That's right. I said it. Eric Branstrom is going to play on his offside next year with Sanderson. That's my prediction. I cannot wait to see it happen. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful piece of art.
Yeah, the decor next year is going to be interesting. That's for sure. There's so many, like, I just don't know where half this decor right now fits in. Like, I, as much as I like Will Lannon, I'm rooting for the guy. I actually don't think he survives after his two-year contract with Ottawa, unfortunately. I think he's going to go to free agency. I think you'll see Branstrom step up. Obviously, Jake Sanderson's right there. I think he'll be in the NHL next year. No question about that. Artem Zub is an interesting question mark. I want the Sens to sign him. The question is Artem Zub going to want to stay with the Sens? That is the question. He's only signed for a one-year deal. And he's come into the league on a one-year deal trying to prove himself, and clearly he has. So personally, I like to see the Sens lock him up for at least 3 to 4 years. Maybe not like 6, 7, 8, because that's a bit of a commitment, but 3 to 4, I think, and have him either with play with Branstrom and have Sanderson play with Shabbat or vice versa. I agree. Those would be the top four, in my opinion. Shabbat, Sanderson, Branstrom, Zub. And then maybe bottom two would be obviously get Branson. And I guess Will Lannon maybe next season. I don't know. I don't think JBD makes the jump, but we'll see.
That's quite the that's a nice take there. I forgot that Zub only signed a 1 year contract. I'd like to see the Senators income up to a 2 to 3 year bridge deal, because as much as I love Zub right now, I don't want him to be the next Nikita Zaitsev. I don't want him to have a super great rookie year and then shit the bed. Don't get me wrong, Nikita Zaitsev has played pretty decent this year, but he's not even close to being what he was in his rookie year. I don't think that Artem Zub is going to be a super flashy all-star 60-point defenseman. I think that Artem Zub is going to be what Dylan DeMello was supposed to be for Thomas Chabot, what Mark Mathot was.
It's interesting you said that, because I actually had to text my friend the other day. I was like, Zub is giving off some serious Mark Mathot vibes.
Literally, I've tweeted it literally so much. I've even written an article about it with New Era Sens. I wrote about why is Zub not playing with Chabot yet? It's got to happen sooner rather than later.
I agree. I think the reason why is because it took Zub a little bit longer to get used to the North American ice, and Chabot, the way Chabot plays is super quick and flashy. Which I think Zub will get there eventually, but. I think he just needs a little bit more time to get his feet under, like his legs under him, and get used to North American ice. But Zub definitely gives me some Mark Messop vibes. Zaitsev, I forgot about Zaitsev. Zaitsev will be on that roster next year. I think Pierre Dorion's a big fan of his. Obviously, with his contract, it's pretty immovable too. So I don't think it's going to be hard to move him out. But I don't hate Zaitsev either. I think Zaitsev is a decent defenseman. But first contract, that's where the issue lies.
See, the thing with Zaitsev is, forget his contract right now. Is he good for your team in a certain role? Yes. In my opinion, right now, he's overperforming right now. He's playing great so far, but I don't think that's sustainable. I think Nikita Zaitsev is ideally a third pairing guy who can move up and down in case of injury. That's it. He's playing more right now out of necessity, but I think if he stays in Ottawa long-term, he's a third pair guy. But now we talk about his contract. $4.5 million for the next couple of years. I think it's 2 to 3 years after this. I forget. But it's not a nice contract. It really isn't. But at the same time, who do we have to pay next year? Brady Tkachuk. Who else do we have to pay? Not many other people. So I think Nikita Zaitsev's contract is not as big of a problem as many people think it is. Sure,
it's he has 4.5 for the next three after this one.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
So he would be he'd be 32 when his contract's up.
Yeah. It's not a good contract at all. It's a bad contract. That's not what I'm saying. But it's not unbearably shitty for the Senators. We're in a good place right now.
The only part that's difficult is that it's a no movement clause and a no trade clause all throughout those. So it's gonna be up to Zaitsev, which I think eventually he will waive.
Once you get traded, because when he was traded from Toronto to Ottawa, he waived it, didn't he?
No, he didn't have one when that happened.
No, he did.
No, I'm looking at Cap Friendly right now, and it's showing. It's showing that they have it. So
okay, yeah, whatever. So, I think Zaitsev's good for now, not good for future. I think he's gonna stick around till probably the end of his contract. But by the end of his contract, that's when we're gonna start paying the other guys, and that's not a problem. Jake Sanderson hasn't signed yet. We'll say Jake Sanderson signs this summer. We'll say
he signs in April after his season's over.
Yeah, we'll say he signs in April. 3 years later, Zaitsev's not there anymore. You can use Zaitsev's money to pay Sanderson.
You also have Klevin and JBD and Lassie Thompson.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think all those prospects are going to stay with the Senators. I think, honestly, as much as I love all those prospects, I think some of those guys will be moved out eventually to fill other holes in the team.
No, I agree with you. I agree. It's just right now, that's just what we have in the pipeline. And obviously, we can't predict the future. So that's just the guys we have right now. But I do think we'll touch more on that in a little bit. I think we should move on to the next category. But
yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that it's great that we have all these prospects, but don't think they're all going to stay here. Things are going to happen. We're going to trade some away to fill up some other holes. That's the beauty of our prospect pool. We've got such a deep pool that we can afford to do that. Not right now. Trading a prospect for a superstar right now is out of the question. Not a good idea. But in the future, if we have those holes that need to be filled, go ahead. And with that being said, let's move on to our next segment. This weekly record of the Senators is pretty interesting so far. At the time of recording, we've only played one game, and it was the famous 5-1 against Toronto. It was 5-1. It is 6-5.
What a game.
Call me a soda.
You can't drink under a roof, but that was a wicked game. And we talked a little bit about on the Queen City podcast with the guys. Is that what it's called? The Queen City?
Yeah, Queen City podcast.
Yeah. A little bit of a plug there for them, but which I talked a little bit about that on there. It was a fantastic game. I mean, did not start off fantastic. I thought it was like, oh gosh, here we go. I thought it was be another 8-1, 9-1. I started Hogberg in my fantasy team that night too, and I was like, oh boy, I should not. Because in my fantasy team, we need a minimum of 3 starts for goalies, or else you lose six goalie categories.
You have Hogberg?
I'm going to explain that in a second. I needed to, because I had Blackwood, who was out with COVID. I had Kakinen, who was out with COVID. And then I had John Gibson, who barely ever plays because Anaheim, all games always got delayed. And everybody else, there's 20 teams in the league with 4 goalies each. So there was not a lot of options for goalies.
Oh, Hogberg, 20 goalie team. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. A 20-team league with 3 goalies each on each team. So there's like not much. There's some slim pickings there, but he did get me 2 wins, so I can't complain. But now that Blackwood and Kakinen and all them are back, Hogberg, I just traded him today, so see you later. But
I still can't believe you picked up Hogberg. Sure, he's played decent the last couple of games, but Hogberg,
I needed starts. I needed my 3 starts, or else you lose six categories if you don't get your 3 starts.
That's fair. Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. That's fair.
But Where was I? Oh, yeah, it was a great game. Like I said, my girlfriend went to bed and she literally looked at me and said, your team sucks. It was 5-1. And she woke up around 11:30-ish a little bit to go to the washroom. And I was like, guess what? My team won. It's fantastic. Fantastic. I'm still kind of riding the high, but it also makes me super nervous for tonight.
Yeah, that was an insane game. Last game when I was watching, I actually decided I was going to join the Toronto Maple Leafs Discord just to see how they were talking. I joined, and I was a Sens fan, but I was being peaceful. I felt I was being peaceful. I didn't see anything taunting. I made a couple jokes here and there. Don't get me wrong. I did throw in some couple jokes, but I was peaceful. My God, what an insane atmosphere. I love that fan base. It's a great, great atmosphere. I prefer the Senators. My Senators are my team. Don't get me wrong. I love the Senators. I will never cheer for Toronto Maple Leafs. But what a Discord.
I was about to disconnect the call.
What a Discord server to be part of. The Toronto Maple Leafs Discord server is one entertaining shit show, if you ask me.
Oh, I can believe it. Those guys, I'm sure they were saying trade away half the team or fire the coach already. I'm sure they were already going off.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, I mean, anyways, we'll move on. We'll move on. That was a fantastic game. Our weekly record is 1-0. We are now on a 2-game win streak.
Do you think we win tonight?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. A part of me thinks Toronto's going to come out storming, but I also think Ottawa is going to come out being like it wasn't just a fluke. So I don't know. I feel like Ottawa learned a lot in that game and how to play Toronto, because Toronto was just, you know, Toronto's speed. Speed and skill is what they have. Ottawa is more of a physical team, and they need to shut them down. That's how they're going to win. It's just shut them down. Do not let Matthews score. Do not let Joe Thornton get an assist. Do not let Marner get in the open slot. It's going to be a tough job, but Senators seem to have some weird success against the Leafs all the time for some odd reason, no matter how good or bad they are. So it could go either way. I do think the Leafs wouldn't take this one, unfortunately. But I would not be surprised if the Sens win 2 or 3 games.
That's fair. That's a fair system, and I can actually completely agree with that. I think that last game, Toronto kind of underestimated the Senators in the third period, which seems to be what they do a lot. I've seen they beat the snot out of whatever team they're facing for the first two periods, but the last period, they always get complacent, nice, I think. And that's when Ottawa really, really picked up the pace and scored 4 goals. Like, what a beautiful...
Great learning experience. I feel like that's something that the Senators needed with all the young guys on their team. And, you know, it's a confidence booster for not just Hogberg, but everybody else on that team. For Batherson, who is struggling to score, he scored a nice backhander goal. For Tim Stutzer doesn't lack confidence, so that it's fine with him. But Connor Brown, who couldn't score on him, picking 80 million breakaways if he gave him the chance, probably one goal and 80 million breakaways. But he was able to score, so it was nice to see some guys get on the score sheet that you normally don't see on the score sheet. Thomas Chabot looked like Thomas Chabot again, which is nice, making the creativity in the offensive zone. You know, like I still need him to work on his defense, but that's Thomas Chabot for you. Even Gabranson looked awful in the first period, but he looked good. He
picked up his pace last game.
The thing with Gabranson is he knows where to be, but he just slow foot speed. He can't keep up with the, and with that's Toronto's strength is speed, and they'll outpace him every single time. So again, that goes back to having Branstrom in the lineup. It's going to add some much needed foot speed because Branstrom is really quick. And that's what you need to beat the Leafs. You need to have a good counter game and be a physical team, which Ottawa has physical components with Tkachuk, get Branson, Austin Watson. What a beauty that guy is. Et cetera. So, and adding, you know, too bad DeZingle was in the lineup, that would help with the speed, but that's how they're going to win tonight, is if they, you know, counter, like play a strong defensive game and counter on the chance, and they capitalize on the chances they get.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So that being said, let's move on. Senator Stocks. We're kind of stealing this from Lalamaze Martian. It's okay. I think it's okay.
Lalamaze Martian, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I just, I like butchering it for a joke.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's a whole joke I do. Lalamaze, it's staying. That's what I'm calling it, Lalamaze. I know it's the league. I'm French, but I'm saying Lalamaze.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, and I know I'm gonna get hate for it, but that's what I'm going for. It's on purpose. It's warranted.
Do you even remember Lalamaze as a Senators goaltender?
Oh, I was way too young for that, but I know I watched a bunch of highlights.
Valid.
What a great goalie when he played in Ottawa.
Yeah, he was fun to watch. Anyways, continue.
Anyways, so we're going to start this week. We start looking at everybody entering the week was zero, like new starting. The players that didn't share that rose this week for us from zero are Dadanov got 2 points for me. He gets a boost of 2. Zub gets a boost of 1 because he had one hell of a game. Timmy, I'm going to give him 1. Batherson, here, 1 second here. I'll write it down. Zub +2, +1. Timmy's +1. Batherson, I'm going to give him a +1. Connor Brown, I'll give him a +1.
+1.
I just watched that game. Dadanov scored 2 beautiful goals. He scored equalizer and the winner. That's why he gets +2 for me. The other guys had a great game. Don't get me wrong, but that game was Dadanov's.
It's nice to see Dadanov finally starting to score because this is what the Sanders brought.
It's nice to see Dadanov. It's nice to see Dadanov leave the goals.
Yeah, I mean, he was on a wicked line in Florida with Barkov and Huberto, so it definitely took him some time to get used to it, but we can definitely see why he signed. And the thing I love about Dadanov is I can't even hate Pierre Dorion for that move because Dadanov chose the Ottawa Senators. Out of all the suitors, he chose to come play for Ottawa for that long. He left.
4 different teams going for him, I think.
Yeah, I think. Oh, I heard there was at least 11, but.
Really?
Yeah, he chose Ottawa. He left sunny Florida to come to the nation's capital for 4 years on a rebuilding team. So I have nothing but respect for that guy. And I'm, you know, it was such a shock, and it was nice to see that a star caliber player like him actually wanted to come play, which bodes well for the future because he's going to be, I guarantee he's going to be used to, like prove to Tkachuk that we're in it to build and whatnot. Exactly. So it was nice to see him finally go on the scoreboard. And I guess for my fantasy team as well, he's starting to heat up. So
I almost traded for him right at the start of the season because I knew I feared he was going to bounce back at some point. But Buddy never answered me. I offered him a nice package. He just never answered me. I messaged him again the other day. He said, "You wish."
Well, his loss, I guess. Same with me and my fantasy. Someone offered me Anthony Duclair for Dadanov straight up. At the time before Dadanov, I think had one assist in the whole season and Duclair had 6 assists. Assist
was a fluke.
Yeah, and Duclair had 6 assists already, and I was like, oh man, it was tempting, but I was like, you know what, I believe in Dadanov. I declined the trade. Literally, like, the next game he scored, and now he every game since then he scored, so.
I love Dadanov.
Yeah.
I love, what even, my favorite thing about Evgeny Dadanov is not even just Dadanov, it's his name. My favorite thing about Dadanov is watching hockey with my roommate who doesn't know anything about hockey, but he's watching because he wants to learn about it, and seeing me see Dadanov score and screaming daddy. That's my favorite part of it all.
I'm still kind of uncomfortable saying that, but I say it anyways. I don't really care.
I love it. I love Dadanov. I love daddy.
You know when the fans are going to be back at the CTC, you're going to see signs everywhere saying who's your daddy or stuff like that. Like it's going to get good. I'm sure Dadanov is going to love it.
But who's your daddy?
Evgeny. But anyways, yeah, I agree with most of those stocks. I'd probably give it up on everybody. I mean, Stützle had Stützle always has a good game. So
Stützle's a beauty.
Like even if we get blown out, like Stützle's always the guy that stands out for some reason.
Actually, I'm gonna give Stützle a +2 because I forgot that he led the entire forward court in ice minutes.
I was so stoked to see that. It was nice to see DJ. It was so nice to see DJ Smith actually play the young guys that much and actually have that shows how much confidence that Stützle has and that confidence that DJ Smith has in him, which is massive because DJ Smith was known, everybody was starting to compare him to Guy Boucher for the longest time there. And rightfully so, he played the veterans a lot, but he's starting to get the rookies going, which is nice to see. He's starting to get Batherson some ice time. I know there was rumors of him scratching Batherson, but for that one game, but
that was weird.
But I don't know if they were actually like legitimate. I think it was more just you know, you get Batherson like a little kick in the butt, be like, let's go type thing. But it's nice to see him giving the young guys a chance and kind of laying off on the veterans. It's, I wonder if that's why Pierre Dorion made this such a Paquette move because he kept coming into the roster and he's like, what do you do? But anyway. It's just so much fun to watch.
Enough of that. Let's talk about our only negative for Senator stocks this week. I've got Willannon at a minus one. I love Christian Willannon. I love him. I want him to do good. But so far, it just hasn't worked out for him yet. I really, really want him to pick it up. But I'm starting to lose a little bit of hope now. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I've rooted for the guy, obviously, after his injury last season. But it just seems like he always has the worst luck. Like, he gets in. Like, he started the season, started getting his legs going. He hasn't played hockey for, like, a year. Started to get his legs going, gets hurt. Then he it just seems like he doesn't have time to actually get into a groove. And I think that's really, really affecting him. I do think Christian Rolandin is a solid defenseman. I think he's a good two-way. But I, like I said earlier, I don't think he's staying with the Sens too much longer. I don't think they trade him. I think they hold on to him, but I do think they end up parting ways in some sort of way, especially knowing maybe to give him a fresh start, and especially knowing the decor that's coming in. I don't think he has really a spot, but I would love it. I'd root for the guy. Always root for a guy with an injury like that, but he did not play good against Toronto. He was clearly out of the element. It was always, every time he's on the ice, something happened. So
yeah, you're worst player.
I think it was a good idea for DJ Smith to scratch him tonight. It's unfortunate, but I know a lot of people are wanting Branson out instead of him, but I think Willannon needs some time to, you know, just, I think you'll see Willannon in tomorrow. I think DJ Smith is just kind of giving him a wake up call, being like, listen, like, you're not guaranteed a roster spot. You need to play better.
Mm-hmm. I love Willannon. Like I said, I love him. I'm rooting for him. I really am. It's just not working out yet. That's the thing. Where does he fit in the long term? That's my question. I think ideally he's a third pair guy, but I think honestly he might get worked out of that, and I don't want to see that, but it might just happen.
I think he won't see him on the team past next season.
That's a fair assessment.
Unfortunately, like you have Zaitsev, who has that contract, which is, and he has a no movement clause, so the only way to get rid of it, like, you can't send him down. He's going to say no. You got Chabot, you got Sanderson, you got Brännström and Zub. That's four guys right there. Then you have Zaitsev and Gudbranson, JBD, who was coming to knock on the door. You got Lasse Thompson, you got Jonathan Aspero. You got, like this is, you know, like the D's plugged in, and I don't think Willannon, like, not that Aspero is going to make the team, but I'm just saying there's a lot of competition at camp. And Willannon clearly is falling out of favor with DJ Smith pretty quick, and once you fall out of favor with the coach, it's pretty hard to get back into it.
Yeah, exactly. With that being said, let's talk about, normally we would not have any inconclusive players, but given this is our first week doing rankings, I'm going to mention Marcus Hogberg. I know that we mentioned that this week we're starting all at zero, but Marcus Hogberg had a very terrible start to the season. So far in the last couple of games, he's played a lot better, getting two back-to-back wins for us in Murray's absence. But I'm going to give him a point and deduct him a point. So I'm going to put him at zero.
Yeah, I know you and I were kind of going back and forth. I had him in the upper stocks just solely based on that game. Because even though it was 5-1, he did let in five goals. Yeah. I don't think all of them were his fault. That Matthews goal, that the first goal was not his fault. Like there was five Sanders there that could have stopped the puck, you know what I mean? But he still let in five goals. So it's like, you exactly. Can't put him there. But he did make some very timely saves, which is what the Sens have been missing for the longest time.
Exactly. He had a great third period. But you can't allow five goals. I know you're playing against Toronto, but you just can't allow five goals. And that's why I'm not giving a plus. But giving his third period play, I'm not giving him a negative either. I'm going to keep him at zero. He's an honorable mention for me. And with that being said, I'm going to pass the mic to you, and you give us our weekly prospect analysis. But first, let me introduce it. Every week, Alex is going to take a look at a couple prospects, between three to five prospects. This week we got three, and he's going to give a little bit of a story or a little bit of a examination to them. I'll let him do that exactly, but this is Alex's segment here, so go right ahead.
I'll mute myself. So I'm going to do I'm not going to go too in depth right now, but I just to start off, I'm going to kind of give, you know, some the weekly like points and stuff like that the three prospects that I decided to look at this week are obviously with my scouting background and whatnot. I like looking at prospects, and you know, the draft's always my favorite time, so it's nice to see some, you know, just kind of dive in a little bit more and kind of see how the prospects are going and how, you know, after we look back on them, where they were. So the three prospects I chose this week are I'll start off with Ridley Gregg. He was Ottawa had 3 first round picks in the first round last year. And they had two, I believe. Did they have two? No, that's my bad. They had 3. They had, obviously, I forgot Sanderson was a first round pick, but they had, he was really great, was their 3rd pick. And a lot of people questioned whether he should have went there or not. I kind of didn't know too much about him at the time. And the thing with the Sens scouting staff is people need to understand. I never doubt the Sens scouting staff, because if there's one thing they're good at, it's drafting. The trades and keeping players is a different story, but drafting has always been their forte, and obviously they know what they want to build. Ridly Greig, to me, he's not going to be a exciting offensive playmaker that's going to get, you know, 80, 90 points a season. He'll probably be around, I don't know, 40 to 45 points, maybe 40 to 50 points in a season. But the thing with Ridly Greig is he is someone you want when you're going for playoffs. He's playing in Belleville right now because the WHL season has not started, but he will go back to the WHL when their season starts. He's played 3 games with them. All 3 games he's looked very good, but he got his first 2 points last night. He has 3 games played, 2 assists with Belleville right now. And the thing I really like about Ridly Greig is he just never stops skating. He reminds me of Vitaly Ibramov, except probably more physically mature and a bit more smart with the puck. Ridly Greig is someone you want on your team in a playoff run. Like I said, he's not going to be a top 6 forward. He'll probably be a bottom 9 forward, but an energy bottom 9 forward. He'll be a guy that go out there and play physical against other teams' first lines, wear them down in a 7-game playoff series. And he does have an offensive upside that he can produce points, not a lot, but he can still produce a lot. So Ridly Greig, I think maybe he wasn't exactly the best pick I think it was 28. Or 26, I think. And obviously, you know, there's other players out there like JJ Paterka and whatnot who people think the Sens should have got. But Ridly Greig, obviously, the Senators are trying to build an identity. That's a tough team to build against, pesky Sens. And Ridly Greig fits that mold perfectly. And I think he will be a Senator for quite a long time. He reminds me of a Chris Neal with more skill than Chris Neal. So I am super excited to see where Ridly Greig ends up and what his future holds. I think you'll see him in the NHL probably. I think he's probably 2 years away. I think he has one more, like, play in the NHL this season, WHL next season, is over 8 season, then make the jump. But anyways, next prospect I'll talk about is another one of Ottawa's first round picks. And this one's been kind of, in my head, he's been kind of one that I've been curious to see, but it's Lassie Thompson. Not much to say about Lassie Thompson. I am not a big fan of his, to be honest. Jacob mentioned that all the prospects from the Senators defensive core will make the team next year. Be in the future. I think Thompson's one of those guys. I do like what he brings. He's strong two-way defenseman that can play both defense and contribute offensively. He's pretty big. He has 2 assists in 3 games with Belleville this year. That's probably where he's going to play the most of the season. He came overseas after playing last year. I don't really have much more to say on Thompson besides that he's a strong two-way defenseman that I think might get a look at the NHL, but I don't know if it will be with Ottawa just because they have much better defensive prospects in the pipeline. But Lassie Thompson is a first-round pick, and he has played some big parts in the Finland World Junior roles. So it's nice to see him get some top minutes there, but he's an intriguing prospect, and I think we'll have to wait more and see how his game translates to the North American game before we actually judge him. He could come out of nowhere, and it takes some players take longer to develop, but Lassie Thompson I think will be one of those guys. He has very raw skill. I think he's very smart with the puck, and he knows the game very well, but he doesn't do anything excessively well. So that's my report on Lassie Thompson. I do like him, but I just don't think with the Sens defensive prospects that he's going to be able to be a Sen in the future. And the last one I want to look at is everyone's favorite North Dakota player, Shane Pinto. He was a Senator's 2nd round pick, I believe, last year. I remember exactly where I was when the Sens picked him. I was on the golf course working for the Frontenacs. They had a golf tournament going on, and I was the guy that was helping run it. And I remember after day one of the draft, I was like, well, Kaliev is still on the board. I was like, Ottawa needs to get Arthur Kaliev. Clearly they did not, because clearly they went to Shane Pinto. And I will be honest, I actually had no idea who the heck that guy was. I'm sure a lot of Sens fans did. But we know who he is now. He plays for the, I think it's the North Dakota Fighting Hawks, I think it's what they're called, in the University of North Dakota, which seems to be the Sens farm system. He's played 20 games this season. He has 14 goals, 12 assists, and 26 points in the NCAA Division I. Which is actually super fantastic. But the stat that really stands out to me, and I went to do some digging, is this tweet from Brad Elliott Schlossman at Schlossman GF on Twitter says, Shane Pinto continues making a case for the NCHC Player of the Year. He leads the league in goals with 13 points, 25 power play goals, 6, 12 power play points, 265 faceoff wins. With a face-off percentage of 63.1%. He is a face-off master, which is, I would not be surprised if you see Shane Pinto make the jump to the Senators next year. I think he is something that Ottawa needs. I think he will help their power play immensely just by winning the face-offs and helping set up. I am now a huge Shane Pinto fan. I do think he will be. I don't think he'll be like a superstar. I don't think you'll see him be a superstar, but he will be a very, very, very good NHL player that will help out a lot. So keep an eye on those three prospects. Obviously, I'll be back next week with some more. I'm trying to keep prospects that are playing in North America right now, because it's really hard to watch the ones that are not in North America. And obviously, with COVID going on, it's a bit harder to watch a lot of other prospects. But those are the three that I've highlighted this week. And out of those three, I think two out of those three will be part of the Senators' future, which is Shane Pinto and Ridley Gregg. Again, Thompson, I'm not fantastically high on. I like him, but I don't know. I just don't know if he'll make the jump.
Well said, well said. And that's our weekly prospect review with Alex Longlap. But my question is, who do you prefer, Shane Pinto or Josh Norris? And why?
That's a tough one. I think Shane Pinto is a more complete player. I do like Josh Norris. I think Josh Norris has a super offensive instinct. But I also think Josh Norris needs to put on some weight. I think he gets bounced around a little bit too much. And I think he lacks the defensive side of the game a little bit. I think Shane Pinto is a more complete forward and a more two-way center. I think Shane Pinto will be more, I can't say more important, because I think Josh Norris will be just as important to the team. But I personally like Shane Pinto more, just because I'm more biased towards two-way forwards, because I was a two-way forward in my hockey days. And I think Josh Norris is more offensively gifted than Shane Pinto, but Shane Pinto can win faceoffs. He obviously, you know, can score goals in the power play, but I think that faceoff ability is huge.
That's fair. Yeah, it's a great assessment there. I think it comes to, for our future of the team, I think it's going to be Brigachuk, Stützle, and Batherson first line. Second line, X player, I guess. I'm not too sure. I don't even know. Wow. Okay, it's going to be Formanton, X player, and Abramov. That's what I'm going to say for the top two lines. That X center is going to be either Josh Norris or Shane Pinto. They're both too good to be on the third line, and yet they're not good enough to be better than Timmy as a first line center. So a first line is a lock for me for the future. But for that second line, I think it's one of the two between Shane Pinto and Josh Norris. Who yet? I'm not quite sure. I like them both pretty much equally. I love what Norris has done in the NHL, but Norris seems, I don't think he's much of a play carrier. I think he's more of a complementary style player.
I agree.
And as a center, you want more of a guy who can carry the offense for the line. And that's why I'm leaning more towards Shane Pinto, who, in my opinion, has been the greatest player in college hockey this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say with not including this draft and next year's draft, who's going to be where, because, you know, Matt Berniers is a top forward. You got Shane Wright in 2022, cross fingers. It's tough to say, but yeah, I agree. Josh Norris is definitely more of a complimentary player, and I would honestly try and put Josh Norris on the wing and see well, how that play
actually
see how that plays out. Maybe have, you know, has Josh Norris on Shane Pinto's wing, see how that goes. Maybe, but I think Josh Norris isn't ready to be a full NHL center yet. I think if he's going to be a center, he needs to play some more meaningful minutes. I do like him a lot, but I think he only has 1 year pro under his belt. So I still think he has a lot of work to do. And I do want to see him on the wing, see how that works out.
That's a really fair assessment. And I didn't even consider Josh Norris as a winger. I love Norris, don't get me wrong. It's not a knock against him. But I think that Pinto is that second line center of the future. And for me, that just gave a little bit of what to do with Norris. But at that second line, that's very interesting. You could have the second line be Formentin, Pinto, and Norris. That'd be a great line.
But you also have Yarventi down there too.
Yeah, that raised the question: what do you do with Yarventi? What do you do with Logan Brown? What do you do with Colin White? It raised so many question marks. It's almost like we have too many prospects. That's not necessarily a problem, but the problem that does cause is how do you pick and choose between each prospect?
It's not a problem yet, but it will be.
It's definitely going to be a problem. Right now, not so much, but I could see it be a problem as soon as next year.
Yep, I think next year we'll start seeing some players get wing. Yeah,
we have Colin White for 3 more years after this at almost $5.5 million. Is it $4.5 or $5.5 million?
I think it's $4.5 million.
$4.5 million for the next 3 years after this.
Which, I mean, if you would have asked me 9 games ago, I would have said that's an awful contract. But Colin White has arguably been the best player in the last 5 games.
I love Colin White. I love Colin White. He's probably one of our best forwards right now. But this thing is, with so many prospects we have, where does he fit in our team long term? Probably the third line center. Do you want your third line center? Not because he's bad, but simply because of guys being ahead of him, like Shane Pinto and Josh Norris. That pushes Colin White down to the third line. Do you want a third line player making $4.5 million? I'm not quite sure. But if I go back to the cap situation, it's not a problem right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about that one, but I think Colin White would also benefit of playing more on the wing.
That's fair, yeah, but same, that still raises a problem.
Who
does he play on the wing with?
Like at this rate, I'd put him on the second line. I'd keep Formentin on the third.
Formentin?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because Formentin, to me, has the speed, but he does not have like the skill and whatnot to keep up with the top six forwards. But he will add some much needed speed to that bottom pairing down there.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Where Colin White actually has some skill, as we've seen, that he could probably keep up with the top guys. But Formentin's speed is his weapon, and I think it will benefit him more in the bottom pairings than it will in the top pairings.
That's a nice thing there. With that being said, let's skip to the last segment of the day, our weekly player review. For this first edition of our player review, we will be going with the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Paul.
Let's go.
That was a lot of hype. I don't know why, but I went with it, and I'm rolling with it. So Nick Paul right now is phenomenal for the Senators. He's definitely been one of our best forwards. Not necessarily as a high ceiling, high expectation, given that we've got guys like Anisimov and Stepan still playing. No hate to those guys, but just we have players like that. Nick Paul has been great for Ottawa so far. He's a great, great player. Right now, he's one of our top six forwards, and I've got no problem with it. What is he tomorrow? By tomorrow, I mean next week, next season, next month, for the rest of the season. Can he keep up this pace that he's on right now? I really hope he does, because he's one of our best players. What is he long-term? Do you think you could see Nick Paul play out the rest of his career as an Ottawa Senator? Or do you think he gets moved on? I'm not quite sure. What do you think, Alex?
Well, I'll go with where he is right now. I'll do my little take there, and then we'll
go ahead.
The long term. But yeah, I was where he is right now. I think he is one of our top forwards. I think he's benefiting a lot from playing in the Canadian division. I do like Nick Paul a lot, but I think his foot speed is going to be an issue later on in his career. His big body really helps, and he's finally learned how to use it, which is what my biggest knock on him has been, is he is a big body that I did not know how to use his big body, but he's finally figured it out. So I'm glad he's done that. As of where I see him tomorrow or like next week or next year, whatever the segment that is, tough to say. I think I still think he's going to be a top player for DJ Smith. I think he's a DJ Smith kind of guy. I think DJ Smith really likes the way Nick Paul plays, physical, can contribute offensively, etc. Where he is long term, tough to say. With all the prospects coming up in the pipeline, I do think I think there is a spot for Nick Paul on this team. I think he's the type of guy you want in the playoff run. He's someone, I feel like every team needs a power forward. Maybe their foot speed's not the greatest, but you always see the power forwards somehow excel in the playoffs. They always drive to the net, play a physical style game, which is what playoff hockey is all about. And I think Nick Paul is someone that will benefit from that. Like you just said, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can do everything right now. He can play physical. He can score a lot of goals. I think he'll be a 20 goal scorer in the future? No. I think he'll be more like, I don't know, 10 to 13 maybe. But I do think when Ottawa's ready to compete, I think he'll be an important part of that team.
The thing with Nick Paul is, as you said, he's a Swiss Army knife. So far, anything you ask him to do this year, he's done remarkably. Who he reminds me of is Jean-Gabriel Peugeot. Under DJ Smith, Jean-Gabriel Peugeot had a career year last year. As a playmaking first-line center, he had a great, great year, and we sold high on him. Under Guy Boucher, he was a third-line pest who made your night living hell. He is impossible to play with. He's only, 5'7", 5'9", something like that. Really small forward, but he plays like he's a friggin' brick wall, man. You can't get past him. Anything you ask him to do, Jean-Gabriel Peugeot does. As much as I miss him in the Senators lineup today, I think Nick Paul is the next best thing. Nick Paul, he can skate, he can shoot, he can pass, he can lay the body, he does anything you need him to. Ideally, for me, I see Nick Paul as a third-line checking forward type of guy. But again, like I say it quite often, he moves up and down the lineup as you need him to, flawlessly, and does a remarkable job. I am a big fan of Nick Paul. I love him a lot. He is definitely one of the best players in this team right now. How long can he sustain this? I hope he can keep it up for the rest of his career. He's a great guy. I want nothing but the best for him. And I hope he keeps doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much more to say about Nick Paul. I'm just imagining him on the wing with Ridly Gregg. What an energy team that would be. Like that'd be a team's nightmare. Cool. We have Ridly Gregg, Nick Paul, and even, you know, maybe add like Formanton with his Formanton speed. You have Nick Paul, we could use his body to create the...
Imagine that line.
Yeah. Like that would be something that I would like to see in the futures. I'm a big fan of Ridly Gregg, so I think Nick Paul reminds me of Ridly Gregg with a bit more skill. Just Nick Paul uses his body well, and I'm trying to think of a powered forward that he kind of reminds me of.
Nick Paul really reminds me of Jean-Gabriel Peugeot, but with more flawless attitude.
Yeah. I'm a
bit of a Chris Kelly kind of guy.
Yeah, I would say more of like a Mike Fisher, but
Mike, that's not a great comparison. That's a great comparison there.
He's one of my favorite players of all time, so I'm glad.
I've got a Mike Fisher jersey in my room.
Same, but yeah, he like you said, he can go up and down the lineup. Mike Fisher could play in the top six. Mike Fisher could hit. Mike Fisher could fight. Mike Fisher could win faceoffs. Mike Fisher was Mike Fisher was the original Jean-Gabriel Peugeot.
100%.
So. I think Nick Paul is similar to that. The only thing with Nick Paul is that his foot speed is probably isn't as good as those two guys, but that's because he's a bit bigger and a bit more taller than them. But he's finally learned how to use his body, which, like I said, something that he needs to learn to use. And I have the same criticism with Logan Brown. You need to learn, if you're that tall, naturally gifted with that height, you need to learn how to use that body to box people out. That's what, like, it's not very many people can say they have that kind of body to play in sports. And sure, your skating may suffer, but you got to learn to compensate for that and use your body to create open ice for yourself, because your feet won't keep up because you're tall and lanky, and that's what happens when you're that. But being able to use that body to create opportunities, not just for yourself to get into the open ice, but also to help create offensive chances for your teammates, is what you need to do. And Nick Paul has learned how to do it, and clearly it's paying off. So,
exactly. With that being said, I think that's where we end off today. And off on a high note, praising Nick Paul, the GOAT, Nick Paul. Praising Nick Paul. That's where we're going off today. That's all for this week. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob LaRevere. Find Alex at AlexLongois15. Find us at Some Sens. Can't wait to see you next week, Sens fans. Go, Sens, go. Let's go watch the Sens kick the Leafs' ass.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a great episode. Go, Sens, go. Matt Murray is starting, by the way.